Hello, everybody. This is Tino from Peace, Love, and Pitbulls, and
Josh from Soy Love here.
And this is our second podcast. And one thing that we didn't touch on last week is, I don't know if you guys know this, but Josh and I are in different states. Josh is in California. I am in Las Vegas.
You know, watching it back, how the Hangouts, the video screen flips back and forth, which is pretty sweet effect that I didn't even have to do anything to edit that. That's just kind of automatic. So if you use Google Hangouts, you will have that effect rocking for you as well.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. But, you know, what's funny is that because you and I can see each other, like I see a little square of myself and then I see the big screen of you. And
yeah.
The last podcast I was watching, when you were saying stuff and I was doing my thumbs up in the bottom, like that wasn't there. You know, because like
yeah.
it works out great because if I need to interrupt, Josh can see me go like this or he can vice versa. So we're not talking on top of each other and the video's having trouble deciphering who's talking.
I just wanted to reference one thing that I wanted to bring up last time, but we didn't get a chance to. About 2 weeks ago, me and Diana were out, you know, doing something on the weekend, and my girlfriend is a tenants' rights attorney, so she works for a nonprofit. She represents low income people who are being evicted unjustly and just different housing issues. So we were out driving around, and she got a call, and she was like, "All right, well, we'll just stop by because this woman lived right outside of Pasadena, so fairly close." Basically, the woman was being evicted or threatened with eviction because she had a pit bull. This woman is a middle-aged woman. She had just lost her home to foreclosure about four months ago, where she had lived for years and years and years. Now she's living in a trailer park because that's all that she could afford right outside of Pasadena. And to make matters even worse, she's going through end-stage cancer. Endometrial cancer, and she has a 12-year-old pit bull. Not just a pit bull, a senior dog that she's had for 12 years. All right, she found this dog as a puppy on the 110.
I saw the story. I'm sorry.
Her name's Sadie, and the landlord there at the trailer park, or the property manager, was there one day. Everything was fine for the first 3 months, you know. They know about the dog. It's a mixed breed. She put it was a mixed breed on the lease or whatever, which is accurate. It is a mixed breed. The property manager was there on site, saw Sadie in the yard, accosted this woman, Susan, who's dying of cancer, and says, "You need to get rid of that dog or we're going to evict you." They're threatening to put out a dying woman on the streets, to die on the streets, essentially. What she tried to do to address the situation was she has no kids. She has no remaining family. She has a couple colleagues from work. She works in Pasadena. And she has a couple friends that have been helping her with her cancer. She's going through chemotherapy now and everything. So she essentially turned Sadie over to a trusted friend to rehome, because he said he was going to rehome it for her. Guess what he did? He took Sadie to the shelter and dropped her off as a stray.
What kind of friend is this?
Yeah. And then once the shelter ran Sadie's microchip, it came up as Susan. So that's how Susan found out that her dog was at the shelter. They called her and said, "Hey, your dog's at the shelter." And
wow.
She was like, what do you mean? So we're sitting at her trailer park. Diana's talking to the woman, you know, saying she's going to do a reasonable accommodation for her to try to get Sadie back. As an emotional support dog, because out here in California, you cannot, if the dog offers an emotional service to you, it can't be discriminated against. This is not a therapy dog. This is not a certified therapy dog. This is a different thing. This woman is like super frail. She's extremely sick. She's laying on her bed, just emotionally distraught. She's going through chemo. She has, pill bottles and stuff laying all around her. Her voice is like super low because she doesn't have that much strength. And all she wants is her dog there with her. And that's like the only thing that she has. And they've essentially taken that. And to make matters worse, now it's at a shelter where they could potentially be killed. And Susan has since been admitted into the hospital. She's gotten worse, so she's no longer at the trailer park because she's now in the hospital, like dying, essentially. And her dog's still in the shelter. So I'm going to put a picture of Sadie on this video when I edit it, and hopefully people can network Sadie, because obviously we want to save Sadie so we can give Susan some peace of mind as she continues to go through what she's going through. Whether she can get Sadie back or not, we'd love to like reunite them so she could see Sadie again. But whether she, whatever happens with Susan, we want to figure something out so Sadie can have somewhere to go. Because I visited her at the shelter. She's pretty spry for a 12-year-old. We were running around throwing tennis balls, and she was chasing me. But this is an example of how breed-specific legislation happens without legislation. Because, like, we don't need legislation and bans in place for these dogs to be targeted and, treated differently from the rest of the dog population. People ask, why do pit bulls end up in shelters so much? Well, this is your answer. Because landlords and property managers discriminate against them in droves, and people that want to own them and have them and keep them are given ultimatums. They're given life ultimatums. They're saying, well, you're going to either be on the streets or you're going to have to move somewhere else. And we all know how difficult it is to move for most of us. It's a pain in the rear. People also say, well, pit bulls are hard to adopt out. What does that mean exactly? They're hard to adopt out because whoever's adopting them has a landlord that doesn't let them come into the property or into the rental unit. That's one of the main reasons right there. So I find that dogs end up getting blamed by politicians and by Steve Madison, for example. He blames the dogs. Someone trying to pass BSL, they always blame the dogs, but they never look at the background circumstances to what makes it hard to keep a pit bull, to adopt one. Landlords, primarily, big reason. And what's the reason why they fill up shelters so much? Landlords, again, because someone takes in a dog, then ends up finding out afterwards that, well, they can't keep the dog, or they find out months or years later the landlord changes the lease or something, and it's always done on the down low. And then, these people don't have representation, they don't know their rights themselves, so a lot of times they just end up turning the dog in. And I just wanted to point out that that's how breed specific legislation happens. Or the philosophy behind it, that's how it's put into motion without legislation. It happens all over the place.
Yeah, landlords and insurance, what I think you should do is you should take that first part that you said, the whole story, and you should start with that on this podcast. Can you do that?
Oh, yeah.
I think that'd be a great way to start out the podcast.
You know, as we were in her home and talking to her, she's super frail and everything, but like the second she starts talking about her dog, tears just start, rolling down her face. Like, she loves the dog. She loves Sadie. And Sadie does something for her emotional well-being. And the fact that the lack of compassion shown by people trying to push that dog out and I don't know. It really doesn't do humanity justice, because I still believe firmly that people in general sense are good. But man, when you have landlords trying to evict a dying woman and kick her dog out, a dog that's done nothing, it just looks a certain way, you're a scumbag. And
I couldn't have said better, man. Actually, that's exactly it. I got a question about the whole stamp thing. I wanted to know, pick your brain about Colleen Lynn, and I like to call her Colin Lynn. I don't know if you saw that on that link that you put about the stamps. So there's a stamp being made with a pit bull type dog on it. She's flipping out, having her people send all kinds of unrelated tragedy photos and kind of stuff to the people who did this, and then I posted it, and I saw you post it about also contacting those people and let them know what a great job they did.
It's just foolishness. I mean, come on, man. Like, the stamp is meant to represent International Happiness Day. I mean, it's got a smiling dog on the stamp. I mean, it's like, and if you look into the dog's story, it's like a shelter dog that was rescued. You know, it's like a great thing. And there, you know, she's all up in arms about it because of the type of dog it is. And then, you know, going further, they're making a big deal about the color scheme of the stamp, saying that, like,
the red on
the nation is like promoting dog fighting, when in reality, if you do just the minimal research, you'd see that, like, the stamp is called the Flag Series.
Yeah.
So it's like red, white, and blue. Like, the dog's white, and then there's blue above the dog's head, and there's red under the dog's head. It's like a color scheme for our flag. But that common sense just goes to the wind. And, you know, she's claiming that the United Nations is now sponsoring and giving love to dog fighting and cruelty, and, you know.
And it's disrespectful to mauling victims. One of your posts I had wrote, or I sent you a private message, why do you debate these idiots, you know? And then my favorite quote was Mark Twain is, don't debate, don't argue with a fool, because the onlookers won't know the difference. And you made a good point, but, you know, the thing that's happening with the stamps and with BSL and with the information that's out there and all the places that are going back on the BSL, it's just a matter of time. I mean,
the reason why, you know, essentially respond to it both in the comment section sometimes and just do pieces on my blog about it is because if there's no counter to these people, you know, they're just going to fill up all the Google results. So it's like if you Google this person's name now, there's all kinds of, like, things that come up showing this person for what, you know, she is, essentially. My blog included, other people do it as well. But the bottom line is all these people do is go to every story and fill up comment sections with just negative stuff. And, like, what she's done with her website is she's paid Google, so when you type in dogs bite, it's the first website that comes up. So anybody that's doing quote-unquote research, that's going to be the first website. And if you're lazy and don't actually look into things, that's going to be what you're going to go with. And I say that because, like, I can speak from personal experience. In Pasadena, Steve Madison, that's the first thing that that's where he gets all his information. Mm-hmm. He references the website. And, you know, that's where he gets his stats. And he doesn't even read anything. He just goes to the website, and they have this colorful bar chart on the right-hand side to say 62% of all blah, blah, blah are pit bulls, and that's the stats he goes with. So he's literally just going there and looking at a picture.
I got an email about this. Someone was asking me about dog parks, if you don't mind moving on a little bit.
Yeah.
Someone messaged me on Peace Love and Pitbull's Facebook about signing a petition because PetSmart has a play group and they don't allow pitbull type dogs. And then I wrote back, well, what do you mean exactly when you say play group? Do you mean a dog park only smaller? And they said yes. And then I wrote them back, count your blessings. Dog parks are not a good idea for not just pit bulls, for any power breed, in quotation marks, big dogs, Rottweilers, any big dog. And it was funny because about 10 years ago I read an article about it said do not bully breeds, it was a bully breed magazine, don't take your dogs your pit bull type dogs into dog parks. And I remember thinking, that's crazy. I just found them. They just built a brand new, beautiful one up by my house. What are you talking about? That's ridiculous. And then after spending some time there and doing some training and then seeing an episode of Caesar talking about it, it actually makes a lot of sense. And when I first started going with Buster and Shorty, they were puppies, so I used to go into the little dog side. I don't have a problem with that, with little dogs, because they're not going to really do any harm. But it's even for them, it's not the proper place for canine socialization. And the article, I have an article by this woman named Tara, I can't remember her last name, it's on peacelovingpitbulls.org. If you go under the read section, it says no dog parks. And I'm coming from a place where I used to think they were okay. And what this article went on to say was when adult dogs are rough playing, they're not playing, they're fighting to gain rank. They're not fighting, they're rough housing for one reason, and it's to gain rank. So people go there and they think that they're exercising their dog, and they're not. They're stressing their dogs out, and you've got, you know, the scenario, if you go to a dog park and you got loose dogs, you've got the people over here talking, and then you've got the dogs kind of, you know, unsupervised doing their own thing, and then the bad manners and the play that they do goes unchecked and sometimes encouraged with laughter. So you get a dog that comes over and mouths another dog and everyone's laughing, oh, that's so cute. Well, if you do that to the wrong dog, there's going to be, you know, a power struggle. Oh, you're not going to do that to me. Oh, you're not going to do that. And then then you get the fight.
Not only that, but there's also just random objects everywhere. So you get like resource guarding and stuff like that with different dogs because there's balls and just all kinds of like fun things, toys thrown everywhere. That's what I, you know, witnessed with my own dogs. I personally don't take my dogs to dog parks either. And it's not because of their behavior. It's more because of just the uncontrollable aspect of it all. And if anything happens, say a dog comes and attacks my dog.
It's your fault.
If that dog is like a Weimaraner, for example, and my dog's like a pit bull mix, I'm going to get blamed for that.
That's right.
Even if my dog didn't even do anything.
One time, Buster, he was about a year old. He went up to play with this other dog, and this dog, like, went after him. And I could see the hurt feelings on Buster's face. It was the weirdest thing. I remember it to this day. He was so mature for his age because he walked away from it. He never got aggravated. He never got aggressive. He was just like, kind of like, hey man, what's your problem? I just want to play, you know? And then from then on, after I had read that article, and Caesar did a great, you could probably find it online. He said, he made a great point. He goes, people bring their dogs to the dog parks to exercise. And he said, no. You exercise your dog before the dog park. And
yeah.
Then when they come, everybody's calm. But that's never going to happen. So, you know, I just say stay away from them. And, you know, I believe all dogs are equal, but I don't believe all dogs are created equal. Meaning, if Shaquille O'Neal and David Spade died, and 1,000 years from now they found Shaquille O'Neal's bones and David Spade's bones next to him, they might think those are two different species. So my point is we have little elite athletes. We have our pit bulls are elite athletes. And if I was to go up to an elite athlete, like you know, some big football player, and started mounting that football player, he's probably going to kick my ass, and he's probably going to kick my ass really well because he's an elite athlete. So I'm not saying that they're more dangerous than any other dog. I'm saying that they're elite athletes, and when we go into these situations, we're setting them up for failure. So my point to this woman who wanted to go to PetSmart was I told her, and she kept coming back at me and saying they should be not discriminating against my pit bull and they should all be able to play. And I was telling her, my point was, no, this is not a place you want to take your dog to let a free-for-all happen unless you know those dogs. My dogs, six of them, five of them pit bulls, play rough, play with each other, but they know each other. Unless I know a group of people's dogs and we know each other well, they're just fighting for rank, and that's just the perfect opportunity and perfect recipe for a dog fight. And again, you said it. Whose fault is it if there's a fight? And who do they come after? And who do they try to crucify and impound and kill ultimately? The pit bull.
Well, yeah, I mean, I got that email or the link as well that you're referring to about the PetSmart play group. I think there's a difference between discriminating against certain dogs that look a certain way, and then because I think that the issue she's trying to raise obviously is the discriminatory aspect. Like, why are you banning these dogs from these playgroups. Now, whether taking part in the playgroup is a good idea from a dog owner's perspective, like, would I go to the playgroup? No. But having that option should be there, because if the option's not there, then you're basically implying that pit bulls are different, which I think should be fought under every circumstance, because they're not. The stuff that you're talking about is making the choice not to go, and here's the reasons why. Mm-hmm. But those are two different things to me, at least.
I agree. I agree with what you're saying. And I wonder, I didn't look into it, but I wonder if it's just pit bull type dogs. I wonder if it's Rots, if it's any kind of power breeds, because as we know with insurance, there's pit bulls aren't the only ones that are being discriminated against when it comes to insurance and stuff like that. So I wonder if there's any other dogs that are.
Yeah, I mean, your reference to like elite athletes, like a lot of pit bulls are, but then a lot of pit bulls are like couch potatoes, essentially.
Yes.
Defining them as elite athletes, that's kind of giving them too much props, basically.
You know what? That's right, and I wrote that down while you were talking. I need to readdress that. Yes, and some of them are couch potatoes. I've seen pit bulls that look like wiener dogs. They're so
yeah, but just from like a from a size standpoint, since you did the Shaq and David Spade thing, I mean, I've seen dogs called pit bulls that you look at them and you're like, dude, this is not a pit bull. Like, this is like a 125-pound mastiff.
Yeah.
Like, how do you, comparing size, there's tons of dogs way bigger than pit bulls that essentially have the ability to do, you know, whatever amount of damage. I mean, that's kind of a subjective topic, but, like, there's a war on big dogs, essentially.
Yeah.
And, you know, pit bulls are just the figurehead for that desire. But these people that want to ban pit bulls, they want to ban, like, 40 different dogs, different types of dogs, and they're just not coming out and saying it.
Yeah, and you know what? That needs to be addressed. I'm glad you said that, because it's not. Like, when I was talking to this guy about insurance, pit bull friendly insurance, I went to different websites, and they all are so many big type of dogs, and that's why people, you need to get involved. You need to pay attention to what's going on with this BSL stuff, because if it's, you don't own a pit bull, well, if you happen to own another big type of dog, you could be on that list. You're already on that list. I was surprised to see how many different dogs, big dogs, are on that list for insurance.
Have you been paying attention to the dog fatalities that have been happening this last week? There's been four different ones in the last, since the 24th, so whatever that is, that's less than a week, 6 days.
Is this counting the one that happened in Wales that was the Malamute?
No. These are
different ones.
United States fatalities.
Hit me with them.
There was, on the 24th, there was a girl in North Carolina, a 3-year-old, that was killed by their pit bull. They had two pit bulls. One wasn't involved. There was no circumstances said, though, so I don't know if the child was left alone. Everything that I've read really hasn't went into the details behind how it happened, only that the one dog had a history of aggression, and that's just written in the media, so I don't know what that means. But that was from the 24th. Then there was a 4-year-old on the 26th in Alabama that was killed by a shepherd and a lab. The girl was left outside in her backyard alone. These dogs, the shepherd and the lab, were notoriously known to run the neighborhood, so they were constantly loose. They were both about 75, 80 pounds, one of the neighbor's dogs. And so, again, that's loose dogs plus unsupervised kid right there. And of course, when you look that up, it just says dogs in the tagline. It doesn't even mention the fact that it was a shepherd or a German shepherd mix, and then a lab mix. And of course, the anti-pit bull people are saying, oh, it's a shepherd pit bull mix. It's a lab pit bull mix.
Wow.
But, and they're trying to like inject that in there, but like every other thing has said shepherd and lab that I've seen. There's even pictures of the dogs, but whatever. And then there was a 13-year-old kid in yesterday. Actually, there was two fatalities yesterday, both bull mastiffs, that a 13-year-old in New Jersey and a 2-year-old in Texas, both loose dogs. The 13-year-old was a 125-pound bull mastiff loose dog from the neighborhood. It had jumped the fence and attacked children before. It had went after a 13-year-old last year. Neighbors say the dog is constantly left outside in all weather 24/7. They also said it's often taunted by children from the neighborhood. And the chain, there's a picture of the dog, and it's a big bull mastiff. The fence that keeps it in the yard is just a chain link fence, probably about 4 feet tall. So when the dog stands on its hind legs, it's halfway above the fence already. So it's routinely jumping the fence and roaming the area. So that's that. And then the 2-year-old in Texas, again, killed by a bull mastiff. Apparently there was an 18-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 2-year-old walking past the house, walking along the sidewalk. The dog saw them. Some accounts say it jumped the fence. Some accounts say it ran out of the garage, but apparently the dog ran out, went after the 8-year-old, and then people intervened, and then it redirected onto the 2-year-old and ended up killing the 2-year-old. Every single instance, there's recklessness just interjected all in between it all, but it's pretty wild that there's been 4 in less than a week. I mean, that is not normal, considering there's about 30, you know, every year. I mean, from a training aspect, what is your thoughts on all that?
Well, So my first question would be, what was reported more? You know, we know about the media bias with, when an attack happens. I'm sure the pit bull attack that they think was a pit bull is probably international news right now, as opposed to the lab and the German Shepherd, right?
The German Shepherd is the primary dog in that one. And then they're saying, even though no one witnessed the attack, they're saying that, well, there could have been a second dog. And if it was, it's this lab mix that runs the neighborhood with the Shepherd. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that one's not being reported a lot. And when it is, it just says dogs. It doesn't even really say anything. And then the pit bull one obviously is getting the most attention. And then the two that just happened yesterday are both bull mastiffs. But these people will come on and say, well, bull mastiffs are pit bulls. First of all, like, bull mastiffs are like 3 times the size of pit bulls.
Oh, Jesus. The reason why I asked, and you said it, of course, the pit bull is going to get the most attention. And I just wanted to read something. I'm glad that we touched on this. Actually, one of the people at the Carson hearing that was online, I think, read these same statistics. Media bias against pit bull. There was a guy named John Davidson, a Post reporter.
What do you mean, the Carson hearing? What do you mean?
The Pasadena, I'm sorry.
Oh, Pasadena, okay.
And someone gave these exact same stats. And this guy named John Davidson from the Denver Post wrote, oh, he got this from the National Canine Research Council, study of media coverage of dog bites over a 4-day period, which included the following. So, again, this is from the National Canine Research Council. If you got any questions, I'm not making this up. These are 4 accounts that happened in 2007. August 18, 2007, Labrador mix attacked a 70-year-old man, sending him to the hospital, critical condition. Police officers shot the dog, charging me after the dog charged the officers. This incident was reported in 1 local newspaper. August 19th, the next day, same year, 2007, 16-month-old child received fatal head and neck injuries after being attacked by a mixed-breed dog. This attack was reported twice by the local paper. By the way, they say mixed-breed dog because they don't know what it was, and if it looked anything like a pit bull, you bet your ass they would have said pit bull. August 20th, 2007, the next day after that, 6-year-old boy was hospitalized after having his ear torn off and receiving severe bites to the head by a medium-sized mixed-breed dog. The incident was reported in 1 article. So in these last 3 incidents, There was each one were reported in the local newspaper once or twice. August 21st, 2007, a 59-year-old woman was attacked in her home by two pit bulls, was hospitalized with severe but not fatal injuries. This attack was reported in, get this, over 230 articles, national and internationally, as well as major television news networks, including CNN, MSNBC, and Fox. So, when we're talking about media bias, we know that it exists, not from just John Davidson's study from the National Canine Research Council, but from actual animal control officers who have went on record saying that media will have told them, don't call us or don't let us know about any attack unless it's a pit bull.
Just the fact that I asked you if you heard of the fatalities this week, and you were like, no, which ones? I mean, I think that speaks loud enough right there, because I referenced four, and only one involved a pit bull. So, I mean, if it was four and they were all pit bulls, you would have undoubtedly heard about it. I just wanted to bring it up because with every single one, recklessness runs amok. In every single example, there's not a lot of details with the pit bull one from North Carolina, but the other three, there's numerous examples of owner irresponsibility. Someone ends up getting injured or hurt, and the dog ultimately gets blamed, you know.
Well, there was, again, and then there was that one in Wales of the Malinois that killed a six-day-old baby, and I think it's all of the UK. Isn't all of the UK banned pit bulls? They banned the pit bulls. A Malinois killed a 6-day-year-old kid, baby. I don't know how that kid was left alone with a dog that they had rescued, by the way. It wasn't even a family dog they'd had forever. It was a rescue, and the kid was left alone with all the dogs and thousands of dogs, not just pit bulls, but all kinds of dogs in homes across the country. It's really a rare occasion that someone dies from a dog bite. I mean, you have more chance of a lightning, of getting struck by lightning.
Oh, yeah. I mean, saying thousands is underplaying. I mean, we're talking millions of dogs. Like millions upon millions. I mean, there's millions of dogs just deemed to be pit bulls, let alone every other breed. I mean, when we add in how many dogs there are in the country and look at how many people there are in the country and just assume, well, that means, you know, we're having X amounts of interactions every single day and nothing ever happens.
Yep.
It just fundamentally speaks to how safe dogs of all types are. And we know all these people involved aren't responsible. Because just as an example, like, everyone does, you know, some crazy stuff or some random stuff that they probably shouldn't do, and still we're not hearing about dog fatalities. So the safeness of dogs trumps the fact that, you know, a lot of people are irresponsible in general and still nothing ever happens. It's so rare when one of these things happens, and then when they do, you know, these circumstances are by and large always there, and yet that's never the focus. And then they want to make the case that, well, they're trying to improve public safety. Well, that doesn't really add up.
Hopefully we can get Karen DeLeese on here, but in her book, Pit Bull Placebo, she's got so many examples of what you're talking about, of the substandard owners, she calls them. And in most of these cases are resident dogs versus family dogs. And if you haven't heard us say that before, the family dog is exactly that. The dog that gets to come in the house, that's loved, that's socialized, that's not on a tether, that's not on a chain in the backyard, it's not locked in a cage. It's a family dog. The latter, which I spoke of, is the resident dog. It's no love, taunted, whatever.
The two bull mastiffs I just mentioned were both resident yard dogs. One, the neighbor said the dog never went inside. It was out there in all weather, and this is in New Jersey, of all places, where God only knows how cold it is in New Jersey right now. Terrible. And the other one was in Texas. But there's pictures of the dogs. I mean, you can see, you know how when you look at dogs, you see like the elbow calluses on them?
Yeah.
Because they've been laying on concrete 24/7. So this mastiff has elbow calluses on all four arms, and he's being pulled out. I don't know if he's a French mastiff or what, but he's being pulled out looking scared, shitless.
there's a I got an email, not an email, someone posted about this person was attacked by a pit bull and went out of their way to learn about pit bulls and actually got a pit bull and posted about how great they are. And this person actually wrote, these dogs need a lot, all caps, lot of training and attention. And I wanted to touch on that. And I actually responded back to this person. And I said, my point is, you got to be careful what you post, because that's not necessarily true.
Yeah.
This person wrote, these dogs need a lot of training and a lot of attention. No. You need a lot of training and a lot of attention, because this is what I've been doing for the past 10 years and helping other people. And I was actually, a year ago, I was a trainer at this pet hotel here in Vegas, and I trained all kinds of dogs, from the littlest yappers to those big, huge, I don't even know what it looked like. It looked like Snuffleupagus, these two twin dogs that I trained. They were huge. So I've run the gamut as far as training. So I know a little bit about training. I'm not the best, but I do know a thing or two about training. So my point to this person was, you got to be careful when you post stuff from a very limited bit of experience. This is your first pit bull. I came at this woman with no judgment and no animosity, or attitude. And I just wanted to let this person know, no, for you, it took a lot of training. For you, it took a lot of attention. These dogs that I have found, out of all the dogs that I've trained, catch on really fast. And the reason they're exploited, most of all, is because they're so eager to please. And they're so loyal that right. gets exploited and taken advantage of. They literally will give their lives for their owners, and they do. So my point to this person was, it's not necessarily true. Most of the pit bulls that I've trained and worked with, most of them catch on really fast, and it doesn't take much effort. And I want people to know, and the reason I'm saying this is because don't go into getting a pit bull thinking that you're going to have to, you know, break the bank with a trainer and spend all this time. No. And my point to this woman was, my brother has the sister of one of my dogs, Boo Boo, and I know he wasn't going to go into the training that I did. So I told him, I said, look, I know you don't have the patience or the money to do this training. And it's not expensive, by the way. Take that dog with you as often as you can, everywhere you can. If you socialize that dog like that, if you're going to the bank, put the dog in your car. If you're going through a drive-through, go take that dog with you. Everywhere you go, take that dog. And he did. And that dog has no training like my dogs, but is just as sweet and just as calm and just as lovable because of exposure. He didn't have to go to a canine course. He didn't go to a boot camp of mine. He's right. My brother. He doesn't even come to my classes. He's my brother. He can come for free. So my point is, They require no more attention or no more training than any other dog. And as a matter of fact, you mentioned the lab attack. Those and the retriever seem to be some really hard-headed dogs to train in this experience I've had training.
Well, my problem with the way the woman spoke in general is just that. She spoke in general. Like, she says these dogs, as if like, okay, you have the ability to speak about your dog because you know your dog. But you can't just blanketly say these dogs as if, like, your dog, your individual dog is a representation of my dog, or your individual dog is a representation of your dog. When you say things like these dogs, you're implying that they're just not sentient beings. They're not individuals. And the exact opposite is true. So when you use that language, you are perpetuating ignorance, and you need to stop because dogs are all different. So if your dog needs training, indeed, like, not all pit bulls are like out of the roof energetic.
That's right.
Not all pit bulls are dog aggressive. No dog breed, you can't fundamentally say, oh, there's 1,000, they're all this. Like, it's just, you're taking shortcuts when you use that type of language.
That's absolutely right. And if, for those of you can't see me, because I'm a little box when we talk to each other, I'm just doing this the whole time, and I'm giving him a thumbs up, because he's absolutely right. Dogs are individuals. And I'm not attacking this person. I guess you saw the post. I'm not attacking this person. If you're listening, all I'm saying is be careful, you know, what you say, because you have a very limited experience with this breed. You've had a bad experience from what I read, and then you have a really good one with this particular dog. Here's the other point. I've had classes where this person comes up with a pit bull, and she cannot even walk that dog without looking like she's water skiing. And then I come up, and I grab that dog, and I let him know, you can't do this. And I'm walking with a dog that isn't mine right next to me in a perfect heel. There's a guy named Tim Ferriss. He wrote this book called The 4-Hour Body, The 4-Hour Work Week, The 4-Hour Chef. And his point is you don't have to break your bank. You don't have to spend 3 hours a day. You can do 5 minutes a day of a walk from your house to the mailbox or to the corner store, whatever it is. And if you did that every day and you were consistent with your training and the boundaries and the structure and the leadership, you would have a great dog. 5 minutes. I have six dogs, five pit bulls and one little yapper. I take them to the park every day, maybe missing a day here or there, but it's not a chore. For me, my dogs are happier. They get along better. They're just better dogs with exercise, just like with people, with me. If I don't work out, if I don't break a sweat, I don't feel good. I'm not, I'm not very happy. So if you love your dog, just take this into consideration. If you really love your dog, you're going to do the stuff that it takes, and it's not hard. It doesn't take a lot of time. You got an email? You got something you want
to? Not specifically an email to the podcast. I just got an email to myself, which I don't think that, you know, someone's going to have issue with me bringing up, but here recently in the shelter world in California, I mean, it's been a problem for a while having dogs get confiscated or having animal control basically fearmonger people into relinquishing their animals under this, well, your dog did this, you have to relinquish it or else you're going to have this happen to you. Just total made up stuff, and people end up relinquishing their dogs. The dogs end up, you know, going into quarantine, and then the people have trouble getting them back. They have to basically sue the shelters to get the dogs back, and there's been a lot of those cases. But I got an email from somebody. Apparently they've had this pit bull for almost 8 years, and the neighbor called animal control on the dog because I guess the dog has a mass on its stomach, and the neighbor called animal control, and animal control came out and confiscated the dog while the owner wasn't even there, took it to the shelter, and euthanized the dog the next day for medical reasons, all without the owner's knowledge. Like, so, and they reached out to me like, what do you suggest we do, or do we have any legal recourse? And I'm like, well, I mean, I'm obviously not a lawyer, but hell yeah, you have legal recourse. Like, you should do this and that and that. So hopefully, you know, they'll follow up on my advice and speak to an actual attorney.
I just got an email from this woman here who does rescue with foreclosed dogs. She'll go into houses and well, any pit bull being, you know, abandoned or anything. And this neighbor has pictures of this dog 9 a.m., 10 a.m., 12 p.m., 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all throughout the day, this dog in a cage in the backyard. Mm-hmm. No one around, just caging this whole thing. Call the animal control all day long, nobody comes out. Then you got this guy, this animal, this scenario, where the animal control comes out and takes the dog. It's like, it's kind of backwards.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, we're talking about like individual scenarios, so you're dealing with different animal control people, but yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, because you'll look at the, like, for instance, the dog-related fatalities. Whenever a dog kills somebody, which is a rare happening, but, you know, whenever it does happen, you look at the dog and you'll see like a track record of like complaints by neighbors and stuff. All these incidences are there and they don't seem to do anything about it. And then the dog ends up, you know, killing somebody months later or a year later or whatever. And then you have like simple things where animal control are like all over the top of you. So it's like, there needs to be like some middle ground where laws are still being enforced, but like, you know, this type of stuff isn't happening because just like this incident that I'm referencing, I can speak to the Carson shelter, which I photograph out a lot. I used to visit more so than I do now because I actually moved to Pasadena within the last couple months. I used to live in Redondo, so I was closer to Carson, so I was able to visit more. But what they do at Carson is I basically started calling it like a racketeering operation at Carson because that's literally what they do. Animal control acts under the color of law, shows up at your house, and basically confiscates your dog and then just stashes it in quarantine for months on end, and impound fees stack up every day. Like they charge you impound fees per day, and then, you know, they say you need to pay X amount to get your dog out. And this is all without a hearing. You know, dogs are property under the law, so you need to follow due process and go through a hearing in order to, you know, deem a dog vicious per se or all these other things. And this is not being done, and people are just relinquishing their animals because they don't know their rights, they don't know the process, they don't know an attorney, they don't know an attorney that'll work for free. A lot of these people are low income. So, I mean, I can reference four instances that have happened just at Carson over the past 6-8 months. These dogs are sitting at Carson. The owner wants the dogs back. Gil, the shelter manager, pretty much fear-mongered the owner into signing the dogs over because he said, oh, you can be sued for this. They were a nuisance out running loose. You're going to lose your job. Like, what? This is the types of stuff that they say, and the people are like, oh, my gosh, for real, for real? And they just, like, sign the dogs over, not wanting to give the dogs over, but fearing that there's going to be, like, some kind of thing come back on them legally. So she signed the dogs over. Now the dogs are just sitting in Carson. And what happens to these dogs is they're put in the quarantine section, which is a corner of one of the buildings that are off limits to the public. And then they just sit there. They sit there, and every day they sit there, impound fees begin to pile up day after day. It's like, I think it's like $17 a day per dog. And dogs in the quarantine section, you can't. They don't come out of the cage. They never get out of the cage. So there's no interaction with volunteers. They're not taken to the play yard. They just sit in their kennel, essentially, and they're being warehoused until either the owner throws their hands up and is like, okay, and they move on, or if certain owners put up a fight, they may eventually get a hearing, which every human deserves a hearing because dogs are property, so that's how it's supposed to work. But they'll put the hearing off a couple months, and then the dogs just sit there for 2 or 3 months, and then the hearing comes up, and they may get their dog back after they pay this gargantuan fee. So that's kind of what's going on. And all the while, these dogs are sitting there taking up cage space. Wow. So you have owners that want their dogs back. They're willing to go through the process, pay. Like this latest instance, the dog is off leash. The woman's willing to pay whatever fine, whatever off-leash fine there is or whatever to get her dogs back. But nah, they're just going to sit there for a couple months probably until the hearing. And all the while, the shelter's killing dogs every day. So, I don't know.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, because that's the first I'm hearing of anything. And it sounds like a racket. It sounds like what you said, that they're trying to make money off of doing this. But my question is, they can't take your dog unless you sign it over, right? Unless there's been some kind of bite, right?
That's how it's supposed to work. And because at the end of the day, you know, it's a property issue. You can't just come in and take somebody's, like, Xbox, for example, and take it because, right. That would be theft, basically.
Well, the way, again, going back to, you know, I don't know how it is out there. I haven't heard anything like that. And out here, just to get a dog, for instance, that dog I was telling you about that's locked in a cage all day, they'll come out and they'll say, is the dog being fed? Does it have shelter? And then that's it. As far as, like, scaring people into giving up their dogs, is the first I'm hearing about it, and that's pretty scary. And the reason I was asking is maybe we should find out what the law is, well, in your area and then also in mine, because about giving up your dog. Because if people know that they can't take your dog unless you sign it over or unless they bit somebody, you know, that needs to be known, because so that more of this doesn't happen.
But a lot of the problem is some of these people that do sign over the dogs, they're doing it under duress, under threats that animal control don't even have the ability to make.
Right.
But what animal control does a lot of times is they go out and they act like cops. They act like they're police officers, and they say, you need to do this. Because, you know, when a cop comes to you and says something, this is how it is. Unless you know the law, like, for instance, if I'm out video cameraing or videoing something and a cop comes out to me and says, hey, you can't video here. Most people are going to be like, oh, okay, and they're going to shut their camera. Unless somebody knows,
right,
you know, the laws there, they're not even going to fight back because it's a cop. They respect the fact that it's a cop, and they just assume that the cop's telling you the truth. That's what's happening here, where animal control comes out. They say something, people are like, well, we don't want no problems. That's what's going to happen. That's what I mean by they act under the color of law. They're acting as if they're police officers, and they're saying, oh, you can be sued for this. This can happen. You're going to lose your job if you don't do this. Like, who makes those types of threats? When in reality, a dog needs to, if a dog's confiscated under the premise of an incident happening, biting somebody or what have you, That dog needs to be deemed dangerous through a process. Right. There needs to be a hearing, and then the dog needs to be deemed dangerous officially. You just can't say something happened without any proof. But that's what's going on a lot of these times.
Bottom line, that's, you know, golden rule: don't sign anything until you've spoken with someone that knows. And you might save your dog a 5-month stay at the local shelter, or even death, for Jesus.